You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are officially on my couch. This is Dr. Michelle with you, as I always am, every Friday, 11 in the morning Pacific Standard Time, here on the country's most listened to internet talk radio station. And may I mention my award-winning show, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. This is the place that you're going to hopefully learn more about yourself and help you live a happier, more fulfilled life. Of course, with the help of certain experts, psychological and inspirational guests, such as my guest today. I also encourage you to give me a call if you would like to ask questions for me or my guest. That number here in Los Angeles is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. Of course, you can instantly email me here at the station if you have a question that you would like to ask and you don't want to put yourself on the air at all. And that email, which is connected to the webpage here on the couch, is DocMichelle at Ella. I can't talk today. DocMichelle at AOL.com. DocMichelle with two L's at AOL.com. And my guest today, by the way, Andrew Cohen. You've heard of him, folks. I know you have. He's the author of the book called Evolutionary Enlightenment, A New Path to Spiritual Awakening. Now, Andrew is a spiritual teacher, and he is founder of the global nonprofit Enlighten Next, and its award-winning publication, Enlighten Next Magazine. Andrew has he's done so much. Since 1986, he's been traveling around the world, giving lectures, intensive retreats on his spiritual path and also his practice. And he's one of the defining voices of the new evolutionary spirituality. And today we're talking about his book, like I said, Evolutionary Enlightenment, and it's so nice to have you on the line with me. Afternoon where you're at, and good morning out there on the West Coast, everybody. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Great to have you with me today. I have to tell you, this is one of the most comprehensive, enlightening books I've ever read. I mean, comfortable to read, in that I didn't want to put it down, but comprehensive in terms of I had to put it down to really think about a lot of your concepts because they were so deep, understandable, but really good. So,
I'm so pleased. The book has really almost been universally been recognized as being able to really as presenting a very coherent and coherent interpretation of spiritual, you know, development for our time.
Yes.
I'm so pleased. I mean, everybody's reacting so positively. It's really so pleasing, and I'm so glad I wrote it. Now it seems to be a benefit for many, many people.
Well, it I think so, and doesn't it make you feel positive too that because people are picking it up and interested in it, there really truly is evolutionary enlightenment going on here, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely true. Yes.
I really enjoyed reading your book also because it has scientific concepts as well about our beginnings as beings and before, along with the religious concepts. And, you know, you also embrace philosophical and scientific concepts as well. And the cool thing, folks, listen to this. The foreword of the book is written by Deepak Chopra. I mean, come on. You can't get any better than that, can you, Andrew?
No, and Deepak was kind enough to write a beautiful introduction, and he actually really did love the book. I spoke to him about something else about a week later, and he told me how much he appreciated it. Mm. So again, it's just going better than I ever expected. So I think we really have something here.
I think we do, by gosh. So let's jump into it. What is evolutionary enlightenment?
Well, evolutionary enlightenment is really a marriage of the traditional Eastern notion of enlightenment, which is the experience of consciousness beyond ego or beyond the psychological self. Mm. And typically, people find access to a part of themselves that they usually were not aware of when, for example, they begin to meditate. Or sometimes when they're out in nature, they glimpse, or they have an experiential discovery of a part of themselves that feels infinite, beginningless and endless, and also is miraculously untainted by memory and by fear. Mm. And what's so significant about this is when we actually have this kind of experience, we discover that there is already a part of ourselves that is free, that is happy, that is infinite. And when we have this kind of recognition, this kind of discovery, it's a shock. It's a shock to discover, this deepest part of myself is already free. I don't really have to overcome anything particularly. A lot of my psychological fears and concerns, all I need to do is really give more attention to awakening to this part of myself that's already free. And that will begin to be what my experience is based on. So the traditional notion of enlightenment is really based upon discovering this part of ourself that is already free. And we are really marrying that concept, that kind of experience, with the Western discovery of evolution. And evolution is simply put, is the understanding that that we are all of reality is developing, is going somewhere, that the universe had a beginning with the Big Bang 14 billion years ago, 13.7 or 14 billion years ago. And ever since then, this process has been evolving and developing and creating new dimensions of itself that didn't exist at the beginning, because at the beginning there was only energy and light. Mm. And then miraculously, energy and light gave rise to matter. Mm. And then billions of years later, matter suddenly gave rise to life. And then from life, eventually, mind and culture emerged. And so we're all part of this process that's definitely going somewhere, that's in a process of becoming. And what this has to do with enlightenment is when we look very deeply into the nature of the energy and intelligence that's driving the whole process, it becomes obvious to us that the quality or the nature of the energy and intelligence that's driving the whole process is overwhelmingly positive. Mm. We discover that the desire to exist in and of itself is overwhelmingly positive and good, that life is good, existence is good, to exist is inherently positive. When we discover that that's true, and that's actually an absolute truth about nature and about life and about existence in the universe and in human culture and consciousness, that ultimately the desire to exist is good, even though so good things happen in the midst of the process, it changes our relationship to our own lives. Because we fundamentally realize we're part of a process that's basically good.
That's really heavy. But it really does combine a lot of the different scientific and spiritual concepts that are in, the Bible, some of the readings of... The Course in Miracles classics, the God is I Am, books, but sort of takes it a little step further, a large step further.
The reason why this whole notion is important is because, you know, we all have problems.
Right.
You know, we all have problems. We have difficulties. Some of us have physical problems that are quite challenging.
Yes.
Some of us emotional and psychological problems that are quite challenging. You know, financial and economic problems, family problems,
okay.
And then we can make it larger. There's problems in our culture. There are larger problems. We're part of a global crisis. There's an economic crisis we're facing. There's an environmental crisis. So there's all kind of problems that we are all facing and dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when all we think about and all we're aware of is our personal problems and our
right.
problems as a global species, you know, it's kind of depressing.
Yes.
We can feel, you know, sometimes a lot of people feel life isn't necessarily such a good thing with all this pain and suffering.
Right.
That's why when you realize that the process that's given rise to all this is essentially good, even though difficult and challenging and sometimes painful things happen within it, it becomes much easier to accept and to embrace what it means to be alive as a human being when you realize that the energy and intelligence that's driving this process is the desire to exist, or the desire to exist is overwhelmingly positive.
Mm-hmm.
That life is good. It changes our attitude fundamentally to our own existence, to our own presence here in this world.
Mm. Are we becoming more enlightened as a species? I mean, did Cro-Magnon man, was he aware of his consciousness being a beautiful thing, or was it basic survival? And, or is that what we're still doing today?
Well, I think that things are evolution and we all be enlightenment, more development and wisdom. The human race is definitely evolving and developing. The Cro-Magnon man, you know, our early ancestors were really living at a level of survival, of biological
mm-hmm.
survival,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they were mainly motivated by the need to collect and eat food and to procreate and
yeah.
to survive the tribal warfare and also just to survive the challenges of living in the midst of nature.
Mm.
But this is a really good question, and this is something a lot of people aren't aware of, is that human culture has been, you know, evolving in a very dramatic way for around 50,000 years.
Right.
And if we look at what's happened and what's happening up to the present moment, in spite of the fact that our past has been full of a lot of conflict,
mm-hmm.
you know, war and conflict,
right.
we can see that over the centuries. Over the millennia and over the centuries, and even through recent times, we are fighting each other less than we ever have before. And
yes.
the famous psychologist from MIT, Steven Pinker, recently wrote a book that documented the fact
yeah.
that human beings are harming each other and killing each other less than we ever have before in human history.
Hmm.
And we are including and accepting each other and more than we ever have. It doesn't mean we don't have a long way to go,
mm-hmm.
but if we look at the present day reality through the long shadow of history, it seems quite obvious that things are getting a lot better and
mm-hmm.
that we human beings are developing. I mean, many people say we're not fast enough, and I can
right.
understand that we would like things to be so much better than they are. But
right.
the fact that human beings are improving and we are learning to live together with greater respect of each other's differences and greater harmony than we ever have in human history, I think is a very significant fact.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And by the way, if you just tuned in here on LA Talk Radio, you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Andrew Cohen, author of the new book. It's a wonderful Evolutionary Enlightenment, A New Path to Spiritual Awakening. And really, I recommend this to really help you out in your life and understand who you really are. Because it encompasses a lot of spiritual concepts as well as quantum information, scientific information. And as you guys know, you listen to the show a lot. I'm always presenting these ideas, and this goes beyond. So you'll really enjoy it. If you would like to ask a question of Andrew, you can go ahead and call here, 323-203-0815. And, of course, email me instantly if you'd like at docmichelle@aol.com to ask Andrew or myself a question. So we're talking about this spirituality, which is evolutionary enlightenment. Andrew, why do you feel that we need a new spirituality?
Well, because... because a lot of the traditional paths in the East and the West talk to us about a heavenly realm, you know, that exists beyond the world.
Right.
In the East, there's the concept of nirvana, of a heavenly, a blissful heavenly realm or sphere that exists beyond the world.
Right.
That if we meditate deeply enough, we will awaken to it, and we will no longer be troubled by the fears and the concerns of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, for example, the idea is if we become a good Christian, if we live a moral life,
right.
The great gift that we'll receive is when we die, we're going to go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of the great religious traditions and spiritual approaches point us to a spiritual dimension or spiritual reality that exists beyond the world of time and space, beyond the world itself.
Hmm.
And I think that in the 21st century, I think that way of looking at reality doesn't really make any sense anymore, because when
right.
we begin to appreciate evolution, when we begin to appreciate that things are getting better and that we're part of a process that is evolving and developing, I think the place we really need to be is right here, and become very interested in creating heaven on earth right here and right now in the future.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the new spirituality gets people very excited about being the people that they already are right now, and about taking more responsibility
mm-hmm.
for creating the kind of world that we all want,
right.
not a kind of spirituality that promises us an experience of happiness after we die.
Hmm. So this is kind of creating our own,
yes,
exactly. using individual choices.
It's about creativity.
Yes. Okay. And this will affect our evolution even more in terms of spiritual enlightenment.
Well, the question is, what is motivating us to live the life that we're living right now?
Hmm.
Are we inspired and motivated by fundamentally a creative impulse?
Mm.
For example, if we just think about the greatest architects of human civilization throughout history in all fields of human endeavor, were individuals who were deeply inspired by a creative impulse and a creative motivation.
Right.
They weren't individuals just that were merely living to procreate and to live in security and comfort. They were actually
right.
trying to
right.
improve the world and improve human culture
mm-hmm.
through their own great gifts. And I think it's awakening to this creative motivation, which is the desire to improve the world. I ultimately think it is spiritually inspired. It's a spiritually inspired motive that comes from deep within the human spirit. The aspiration to improve the world, to make it a better place through our own efforts and through our own aspirations. And so this creative impulse, this evolutionary impulse, when we awaken to it, really, it changes our motivation to be ourselves, and changes the motivation we have to exist in this world in the most positive way.
Sure.
So the idea here is to go from a very small-minded, self-centered relationship to life, which is me always worried and concerned about me and how
right.
I feel,
right.
to a relationship to life that is very creative. I'm very interested in the world. I'm very interested in the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
I want the world to be a better place as a result of the fact that I was here.
Yes. And I think you are, personally, you. But that's, I will talk about our egos getting in the way. As a psychologist, that it's a biggie. That's a huge subject that we focus on in working with folks. But also, we talk about self-confidence. What do you mean in your book by spiritual self-confidence as opposed to, normal self-confidence?
Well, that's a great question. Usually when we experience self-confidence is because we are good at something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good at science, or I'm good at sports, or I'm a beautiful person. I have a beautiful body.
Yes.
So often people gain their confidence from either things they're capable of doing, or certain assets or attributes, that they have. But that kind of confidence is relatively superficial. What
mm-hmm.
spiritual self-confidence comes from knowing unequivocally and absolutely who we really are and why we're here in this world. So spiritual self-confidence comes from the discovery and the awakening to what we were speaking about at the beginning of the call today. You know, it's the deepest part of ourself, a part of ourself that has no beginning and no end, and a part of ourself that is untouched by history and the fears and desires of the ego, the psychological self that you were referring to. It's a part of ourself that is already free, that is already free and already liberated. Mm. So knowing without any doubt that who you really are is not the psychological self, is not the ego, but is this deeper or deepest part of the self that the nature of which is beginningless and endless. The Buddha called this part of the self the unborn and the deathless, you know, the uncreated.
Right.
When we know this without any doubt, it gives us an enormous sense of self-confidence. You know, we transcend fear.
Mm-hmm.
And then the why we're here, the understanding of why we're here emerges when we awaken to evolution, when we realize, as we've been speaking about on the call today, that we're part of a process that's going somewhere,
mm-hmm.
that the energy and intelligence that created the universe is dynamic, the nature of which is overwhelmingly good and overwhelmingly positive.
Mm-hmm.
And we awaken to this creative motivation that comes from, you know, awakening to this, the energy and intelligence that created the universe. We awaken to and begin to experience a dynamic, future-oriented, you know, desire to be here. I want to be here so I can create a better future for us all, you know.
Mm. Yes.
So knowing these things unequivocally and absolutely gives us an enormous amount of spiritual self-confidence when we meet people or when people meet us.
Huh.
Well, kind of deep sense of what we're calling spiritual self-confidence, of knowing who we are and why we're here, will be emanating from us. Because you know, we're no longer to be living in a sense like too many of us do, like beggars, you know. Hoping for a little bit of relief and looking always at life and other people for what we can get out of them for ourselves.
Right.
But we're people that are really, we experience ourselves as being already full, already overflowing, and we're here to see how much we can give.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. Are we separate from the intelligence who created the universe, God, absolute power, whatever? Are we separate, or are we that? Did we partake in that?
Well, how could we be separate from the energy and intelligence that created, that gave rise to the whole process? Because, you know, the whole process is, from a certain point of view, from a certain perspective, it's one process.
Mm.
You know, it's one process. So how could the emergence of human intelligence ultimately be completely separate from the energy and intelligence that gave rise to it? It doesn't make sense that would even be possible, because
right.
from the ultimate mystical revelation from all the great traditions, you know, the ultimate truth about the nature of reality is that there's only one and not two. You know, that
yes.
reality, the ultimate, you know, perspective that liberates is that there is only one.
Yes.
And so the answer to your question is of course, we are all we're all inherently part of one process.
Mm.
And discovering that and awakening to that helps us to transcend, you know, what you were bringing up before. You know, the fears and desires of the psychological self, of, you know, the small self or the ego that experiences itself as being separate. You know, I'm alone. You know, the sense of being alone, isolated, you know, alienated, you know, is
yes.
not true. When we awaken in all the ways we've been speaking about, we discover this has really never been true. But when we live in the world of the ego, of the separate psychological self, it creates
yes.
the appearance or the illusion of painful separation.
Mm. Exactly. It seems that way, doesn't it? Well, I have an email here that I'd like to read you, a question that came over on docmichelle@AOL.com here to LA Talk Radio for you, Andrew.
Okay.
And it's from Katie, and she says, I really enjoy hearing about your book. I would love to read it. What I don't understand is, how can we separate ego within ourselves and know we are ultimately God? That's a good question. Mm. That's a very good question.
Well, the way it works is, you know, there are kind of methods and techniques which help to catalyze certain experiences in the mm. self. But what I always like to point people to is, more than the techniques, you know, which can be very powerful and effective, if this is going to really be a long-term, lasting kind mm. of transformation that we are aspiring towards, then we need to desire that kind of transformation. We need to desire to be liberated from the fears and desires of the separate psychological self. More than we want anything else, we have to really desire this kind of transformation. It's not that we just simply want to suffer less than we may. We have to want to be a liberated person. This is what happened to me in my own life.
Yes.
I'm 56 years old now, but when I was 22 years old, I was fed up with living in the old way. I was tired of my own suffering, and I was tired of the repetitive nature and predictable nature of my own inner experience. I really wanted to be free. I wanted to be a liberated person, and it became a passion in me. So the answer to the question is, you have to really want this. You have to cultivate a desire for a deep and profound shift, a transformation in yourself, and that's what will make any of the methods and techniques and approaches that you apply, effective. You have to want to be free from your smaller, separate self. You have to begin to lose interest in it because you know there's something deeper and more and of greater and lasting significance that already exists within you. So the cultivation of this passion will allow you to begin to concentrate and begin to pay attention at deeper levels, within yourself. And what's going to happen is you will, as a result of the cultivating this kind of passion and this deeper concentration, begin to awaken and begin to discover. You'll experience insight. You'll begin to see that there is a much deeper dimension to who you are. And you'll begin to have repeated experiences and repeated discoveries of this deeper or deepest dimension of yourself. And these repeated discoveries will begin to give you a sense of confidence that this is actually true. And that confidence will help to take you all the way to the other side.
And I'm not going to reveal the end where you talk about the separation and how to manage and know that you're becoming more awakened. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But thank you, by the way, Katie, for emailing us that question. You're talking about, the simpler, what did you say, the smaller separate self? I love that. The ego needs, you're talking
the
about
the small self.
It's all about me. It's all about what I need. It's all about gratification. It's all about
narcissism.
And we all sort of have that, and it sort of comes within the package of being on this material plane, of course, in order to
survive. It's true, and I think we want to say, I think it's part of it's a cultural epidemic, I think it's part of, we've heard that I'm a baby boomer, I'm 56, but before my generation, my parents' generation, the generation of the Second World War, they were called the greatest generation. And at a level of culture, they definitely were not as self-centered as my generation is, And I was brought up to be a self-centered person. It's not my fault as much as, in the same way, it's not any of our fault. It was the 60s and the 70s and the 80s was all about me. It was all about the me generation. It was the age of the individual, the freedom of and for the individual, the liberation of the individual, which was a very positive thing. It brought many liberation movements, the women's liberation movement, the gay liberation movement, there was many social reforms and social revolutions that were very positive and lasting. But the downside of that cultural revolution, it was also created a culture of narcissism, and many people from my generation, the baby boomer generation, and our children, and our children's children suffer from this cultural epidemic. So the reason that many of us are so intensely self-centered, is a result of our cultural conditioning, and it's very hard to see that. But when you realize that we're conditioned to be egomaniacs, the culture is conditioned to us to be egomaniacs, it makes it easier to deal with. It's not a personal problem as much as it's a cultural predicament.
I agree with you, and especially with our kids now, this generation and their kids probably, as things pick up in the advances in the world, it's of course the immediate gratification world. When you have immediate gratification and you want more, it's an addiction. It's seemingly to never having enough. It's not about survival anymore. It's about an addiction to getting stuff and, not allowing the mind to clarify and be with nothingness,
No, that you're definitely right. There is a kind of an addiction, but the worst part of it is that our consciousness, that our experience of consciousness and awareness, becomes located and focused around the locus of, as we've been discussing on the call, the small self, the ego. That we and how we can tell is we think about ourselves. We think about the ego's fears, the ego's desires. The ego's fantasies, you know, all the time. So what happened is our experience of being alive, our experience of consciousness, our experience of being alive becomes really fundamentally the story of the ego. And that is a very small part of a much bigger picture. When we begin to transcend the ego, the small self, it's like waking up from a dream or stepping out of a small prison. We realize we're part of something that's very big. And that's when we begin to experience liberation and exhilaration and inspiration. It's like waking up from a very bad dream of being, you know, trapped in a small room or a narrow cave somewhere, and about suddenly being free from it. It's like you start a whole new life. And I really do mean that. I'm not exaggerating.
Yes. Once people do start this new life, do they kind of have to be diligent about their practice per se and about their thought processes, or once? Okay. So it's an ongoing process.
We always have to be diligent because there are, you know, and many people have these kind of experiences.
Right.
They have an experience of awakening or of some kind of transcendence, and they see through the illusion of separateness and the illusion of the world that the ego creates. And then they think, oh, now I've got it. And then the next thing they know, they're falling back into that small world, and they forgot how they got there. And the reason is because they weren't really diligent. I mean, this is something that is very subtle. You know, the evolution of consciousness, the transformation of consciousness, the experience of insight, we're talking about awakening to a level of subtlety of perception that is extraordinary and profound. So the necessity of to be diligent, to be aware, to be awake, to be paying attention, to be careful, and to be committed, you know, we can't over stress how important it is.
And this is what you talk about in your book when you're talking about awakening to our authentic selves. And we'll talk more about that. And by the way, if you just tuned in here on LA Talk Radio on the couch here, my special guest is Andrew Cohen. He's the author of Evolutionary Enlightenment, A New Path to Spiritual Awakening. Of course, Andrew's a spiritual teacher, founder of the global nonprofit Enlighten Next, and of course, the award-winning publication Enlighten Next magazine. And you've been doing this a long time, Andrew. You said you're
26 years.
Ooh, that's wonderful. So you have awakened to your authentic self, and you give several ways in your book, suggestions, ideas, how to try to go towards doing that. How can we awake our authentic selves through what you talk about as being?
Well, the discovery of being is what I call it's awakening to what I call the traditional non-evolutionary path to enlightenment, the traditional Eastern enlightenment, which we discover through the practice of meditation, you know, the time-honored, you know, perennial path and practice of meditation, which human beings have been doing for thousands of years. And the way that works is when you meditate, you choose not to identify with the mind or the content of consciousness. Mind is not consciousness itself, but is the content of consciousness, you know, thoughts and memories.
Right.
So when we meditate, we choose to have no relationship or to not identify with the content of consciousness. And what's very interesting is when you cease to identify with the content of consciousness, interestingly enough, your awareness of time begins to fade into the background. So when we cease to identify with thought or the content of consciousness, time fades into the background. And then when we meditate, and when time fades into the background, our awareness of the world fades into the background. So when mind, time, and world disappear, everything disappears. Including our awareness of even our own physical form. And when everything disappears, we discover that we're still here, even when there's no memory left.
Yes.
When there's no relative sense of personal identity, when that's all gone, we realize that who I am, who my most intimately felt sense of self, you know, is still there. And so that's when we discovered this deepest dimension of the self that's never been born and never entered the stream of time that we've been speaking about throughout this phone call. We discovered the deepest part of ourself is immortal and untouched by anything that ever happened in time. That's the awakening to being, timeless, formless, infinite being. This is the ultimate nature of reality before the universe was born. Like they say in Zen Buddhism, what was your original face before your parents were born?
Right.
It's the discovery of timeless, formless being. And the way we experience the freedom, the infinite freedom of being, is through entering into a state of meditative awareness.
Yes. That is one of the common practices, of the Eastern religions. To get there, they say. A lot of those shows on, there's a lot of new programs that are offering information about, say, the afterlife or the before life or whatever. Have you checked out the program? I think it's on the Bio Channel. It's called I Survived. I've had many guests and authors who've actually physically died for lengthy periods of time and gone to the other side of pure light, pure being.
I've never had that kind of experience myself, but I do believe that as the material universe is part of a continuum, I believe also the interior universe of consciousness is also part of a continuum. And I believe these kinds of experiences that people claim to have of near-death experiences or when temporarily the heart stops beating and the mind seems to go blank, that the people claim that not only did they not die, but they had experience of other worlds, other realms, other dimensions of existence.
Right. So this is possible.
And since in some of these cases their body was technically dead.
Yes.
It's hard really to deny what people are saying.
It really is.
Since their consciousness or their spirit apparently kept on having experience, even though their body seemed to be dead.
Right.
That means something.
Fascinating things. By the way, if you just tuned in, you're on the couch here with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Andrew Cohen, author of Evolutionary Enlightenment, A New Path to Spiritual Awakening. If you would like to ask Andrew a question, you may do so. Email me right here directly, docmichelle@aol.com. Also, you can call if you'd like, 323-203-0815. We've had a couple of bubbles pop up on the line, but they pop off. So hang in there and let the phone ring, because when Andrew and I are talking, we're going to wait until we finish a thought. So be patient, folks. Andrew, you also talk about awakening to our authentic selves through becoming. Now, you talked about being. What's the becoming aspect of it?
Well, that's what I mentioned earlier in the talk, and the becoming aspect is awakening to the energy and intelligence that created the universe, that's creating the universe.
Right.
If we look back and if we look at the cosmos, and we go back to the beginning when it all exploded into being, and then look at where we've come to, we can see that something dynamic and dramatic is actually happening here. So the human experience of the energy and intelligence that created the universe and that's driving the creative process, human beings experience at three different levels of their experience. The first place is in the biological command to procreate, or the sexual impulse. And the sexual impulse, when we experience it, when we experience at a biological level, a ferocious creative impulse that we experience at a biological level.
Right.
And the experience of that creative impulse is the experience of ecstasy and urgency. It's an ecstatic urgency.
Yes.
And it's very, very powerful. And that is definitely a desire to exist. But at much, much higher levels of our own development, we experience that same ecstatic urgency as the creative impulse. And I was speaking about this earlier, that very creative people, great geniuses in all fields of human endeavor, whether it's art or science or music,
yes,
or spirituality. Mm-hmm. You know, the greatest architects of human civilization have been creative geniuses, and a creative genius is someone who's driven,
yes,
by an ecstatic urgency to give rise to something that's new. They're innovators.
Mm-hmm.
They are driven to innovate and to give rise to that which is new. So the drive towards becoming, which is the same energy and intelligence that created the universe and is creating the universe,
mm-hmm,
human beings experience as the sexual impulse, as the creative impulse, the urge towards innovation, and ultimately as the spiritual impulse, which is the urge towards consciousness. So, for example,
yes,
I wrote this book, Evolutionary Enlightenment, for people that are driven towards consciousness, you know, driven or compelled by consciousness.
Right.
And that experience, and we know that experience when we feel, I must become more conscious.
Yes.
I have to become more conscious. Not only that would be a nice idea, but some people feel driven,
yes,
to become more awake, to become more aware, to develop spiritually.
Right.
And so that the spiritual impulse, which is the urge towards consciousness, is the highest level or an expression in the creative process of the same energy intelligence that gave rise to the universe.
Yes.
And so when we realize that the urge to exist, the desire to exist, you know, human beings experience as the sexual impulse, as the creative impulse, as the spiritual impulse, and the urge towards consciousness, and we realize that that is the creative process expressing itself,
yes,
to us.
Mm-hmm.
When we realize that, it's quite something. When it begins to dawn on us, we realize, well, something extraordinary is happening here and trying to happen. And if I could only awaken to this, recognize it, realize it, my life would be transformed.
Mm. You know, I just got an email, Andrew, from Steve. He identifies himself as Steve. I don't know if this is kind of what we're talking about directly, but I'll go for it, and I know you're going to answer it in a way that will really inform him of what you're talking about. Do you mean when we talk about desiring to exist that we come back as reincarnated people? What do you think about that?
The answer is not necessarily.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not necessarily, but the issue is that as you know, when you and I were just speaking about this a couple of minutes ago, the material universe is part of a continuum. In other words,
yes,
the energy and the light that first emerged, you know, in the Big Bang, you know, ultimately, you know, created, you know, the subatomic particles and eventually the atoms and the molecules that became the matter that gave rise to galaxies, planets, and stars.
Right.
And those same atoms and molecules are present in our own physical body. So we see that the matter. And the matter and the molecules that are in our physical form, you know, have been part of a continuum that began a very long, you know, billions and billions of years ago.
Right.
And so in the same way,
mm-hmm,
I think that the capacity for consciousness, for withinness, for interiority, you know, the inner dimension of reality, mm-hmm, the human beings experience as consciousness,
mm-hmm,
as subjectivity, as awareness, is also part of the continuum. And
mm-hmm,
so it makes sense to me that that just because our physical form would eventually, you know, die off or be cast off or come to the end of its process,
yes,
it doesn't mean that that all dimensions of the of our interior experience would come to a final end.
Hmm. There you go, and I hope he answered your question, Steve. Sounds like he did to me, and thank you so much for emailing me. In your book, Andrew, you also suggest that we face everything and avoid nothing. What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, facing everything and avoiding nothing is kind of the ultimate or most demanding form of spiritual practice. So
mm-hmm,
most of us are face very little and avoid a lot.
Right.
Wouldn't you say you're a psychologist, so you would know that, I think, probably from your profession.
Sure.
But of course, the habit for many of us is to avoid things, is to run away from things, is
yes,
to hide from ourselves and the truth about ourselves and our own experience,
mm-hmm,
is to avoid and to deny. And when we avoid and deny things, it creates problems for ourselves in the present and the future. It creates all kinds of problems for ourselves. And we all know that the more we can face ourselves, the more we can come to terms with the reality of ourselves and our own experience, the better our future is going to be. Mm-hmm. So if our spiritual practice then became facing everything and avoiding nothing, we would be in the most ideal positions then to create a very, very positive future, don't you think?
Mm, absolutely. And what we need to face a lot of things about, you know, what is within us and who our true selves are. Is that pretty much what you're talking about?
Well, it yes. We need to face all everything, including the extremes. So the extremes would be, on one hand, there are, I think many of us probably have darker parts of our personalities and darker motivations that we maybe avoid or deny, that we might be acting on. We might be pretending to ourselves that it's not true. And at the same time, on the other end of the spectrum, we have capacities for greatness.
We do.
For truth, for beauty. Mm-hmm. We have these capacities in ourselves that often we don't have the courage to actualize or even believe in. We don't necessarily even believe we're capable of greatness.
Sure.
And so both these extremes are true. And part of facing everything and avoiding nothing is not only facing, you know, our darker motives and impulses, but also it's facing the glow and the light of our higher developmental and spiritual potential.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as a psychologist, I think a lot of that is, you know, understanding that we do use certain thought processes to survive our environments, whatever they may be, you know, buying into a lot of concepts about who we are in the world. We all make mistakes. We all have low self-esteem. We all have issues. We all have things that we do to shove ourselves into dark places. But, you know, I think a lot of what you're saying, too, and maybe I'm wrong, but it's about forgiving ourselves, forgiving others, allowing, and that's my big fun Zen word, that's my favorite, is allow, and try to just connect with everything in moments of meditative state.
Well, I agree with everything that you just said. The one element I want to add to it is we want to forgive and accept and allow. And we also, which is all very important, and we also want to be committed to our own higher development.
Right.
Because we can develop.
Mm-hmm.
We can continually develop, and that's something that most of us don't know. You know, we are actually capable of enormous change and transformation.
Right.
So we want to forgive, and we want to accept, and we want to allow, and we also want to develop.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about when we're discussing evolutionary enlightenment, allowing ourselves to continue, you know, developing. So you suggest that transformation occurs. You know, we try to work on ourselves and read evolutionary enlightenment and practice some of the concepts, some of the conscious concepts that you put out there. And you say that the transformation occurs when our awakening to the authentic self crosses the threshold from 50% to 51%. So we want to sort of keep that balance, correct? As we talked about earlier, you know, practicing the conscious thoughts that will, you know, put us more towards enlightenment. So when we're at 51%, how can we stay there?
Well, that gets back to what I said earlier to the woman's question. How deeply do we want to change?
Yes.
Is this something that has it become an all-consuming passion for us that we realize that maybe this kind of change and transformation is the most important thing?
Mm.
Because the thing is, the way we can stay there is by having this kind of shift, this moral, philosophical, mm-hmm. and spiritual transformation.
Yes.
Become more important to us and so many other things in life, you know. It's like anything else. How important to us is it? And people, you know, truly great human beings tend to be very passionate about something. And whatever it is they're passionate about, they have really put it first in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so so for this to really work over the long term, we have to have the courage of our convictions. We need to have the courage to put this kind of, to make this kind of transformation a priority.
Yes.
So because what we're talking about is embracing different kinds of values.
Right.
You know, when we speak about the evolution of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
we're speaking about a kind of value that is not commonly recognized or understood in our culture as being
right.
very important.
Yes, yes.
If you tell somebody, oh, I believe the evolution of consciousness is the most important thing, people might look at you as if you're crazy. They
right.
won't actually even know what you're talking about.
Right, exactly.
So the evolution of consciousness, this kind of transformation,
yes.
has to become, we have to accept it.
Yep.
As a new value that
right.
that many or most other people might not yet be able to recognize as having any value,
mm-hmm.
and so that requires a lot of courage.
Yes,
you know,
it does. It
we
sure
have
does.
To be willing to have the courage of our convictions in a disbelieving and unknowing world.
Yes, yes. And on that note, folks, we are running out of time, Andrew. But what a wonderful book.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. You've been terrific.
Oh, so have you. Thank you so much for sharing all of your enlightening answers with my listeners. And again, folks, Andrew Cohen, author of Evolutionary Enlightenment, A New Path to Spiritual Awakening. How can they get a hold of your book and get in touch with you, Andrew?
Well, they can buy my book at evolutionaryenlightenment.com. And if they want to get in touch with me, they can find my blog at andrewcohen.com, and there's a schedule of upcoming events and things there also.
Oh, terrific. Thanks again so much. And
Thank you.
I know you helped a lot of listeners out there, and they're going to grab your book to get more, to learn how to become more enlightened. All right, Andrew. Take good care now, and blessings to you always.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye now. All right, my guest again, Andrew Cohen, and the book's a great read, folks. You really, it is worthwhile. Help you out there. This is Dr. Michelle, and you can stay on the couch if you like, but we have more great shows coming up here on LA Talk Radio. Plus, CBS News is next. Do take care of yourselves first, and that will make you great for everybody else. All right, I'll be back next week. We're going to have a wonderful show as usual, another enlightening author. Bye-bye. Thank you.